Access number 27774, Mr. Ilya Suster, Reel 6. Now, you're talking about a field message book that you made out. Could you explain what the field message book was and what it
The field message book was the first interrogation on brigade level to inform division of the units which have been captured on any details you would have known in advance. They were then collected and immediately dispatched with this sheet, which I have written here, to divisional headquarters.
And that's a copy of what you
that
wrote.
Is copy, but the other one you can see there, that's a copy, and that is here, you could, field message book. This book is ruled in inch quarter. Well, that is the official book, yeah?
Now, what's the next thing you remember? Any particular instance you remember of the advance to Hamburg then?
Well, I wanted only to tell you, for instance, here, I have here, in April that was, I don't know, I have got here, captured one civilian, Burgomaster of Fulda, and then I give the name. And then two civilians with question mark, attention, attention, that means, that is divisional from the divisional staff of Brandenburg. That is a secret German, where they have all the secrets and sabotage. And there you can see attention, attention. Then I say this from artillery 8 and 18. Here, I do not know, sir, what to do.
You're asking for advice?
Yes, because it's beyond me. Yeah, you see that?
And what happened? Do you remember?
Well, I don't remember. They went
immediately above you, yeah.
Then to division, yeah. Incidentally, Captain Lindsay is mentioned many times later on because he negotiated first before Spell for the divisional because he was more or less working with Major General Lyon, yeah? And him I knew well.
Captain Lindsay was at Divisional HQ, and he was the one these messages would go to.
Yes, that is what I thought, yeah. Just, and then the only one, you see here, I'm writing all the time. Here, you see, one
this
day.
There are different days in April.
Yeah, this is on 16th of April. We had two SS prisoners, and then we have two civilian harmless, I put there, 16th, 4th. And then often I put details to division. Here, that day, 44 prisoners, 31 prisoners, company FB so-and-so, three so-and-so. You see, I had to find it out.
So you were finding out their units and preliminary here, interrogation and assessment.
Four company was divided and posted in so-and-so, so-and-so. You see here, detail. Five platoons with infantry. Five prisoners, HQ, so-and-so. Then they could look it up, yeah? That is saving time. Here I said, one prisoner, Wachtmeister is a Wachtmeister so-and-so. And then I put here gas. Five to six, Festungspack division, employed as infantry. But there was a gas bunker on this, which they told me, so I just reported it, yeah? That was a military gas depot, which they discovered afterwards. Hmm? Captured by, here, 1st, 5th Queens, 23 prisoners, two company, marine, you know, like this. You see, and one book is with the museum in Hamburg. Just one, is there something interesting? Well, that is the advance, yeah? So we landed in Klecken afterwards. Stragglers. Oh, it started getting less and less important. Yeah.
As the war was naturally
finished. Yeah, well, because the tank, they had no tanks there as far as I know, and we were advancing, except the SS, they were always defending. And even they did, in the last days of the war, before they surrendered, our infantry was shot up after they showed a white flag. That is well known everywhere. Well, I think that's enough of this, yeah?
Now, how were you getting on with the German civilians? I mean, were you used as a much as an interpreter? I mean, as you pass through the villages, you know, there's civilians all around.
Well, we were not talking much to civilians. When we entered, often we entered in and demand some fresh vegetables or some soup, yeah? But we
would
didn't...
Would you be used as an interpreter for that? Or the...
For what?
To ask them for the fresh, for the soup or whatever.
No, soldiers.
The soldiers would have enough German to do that.
They were so afraid they would do anything, but provided, you know, and I think our troops, as far as I know, behaved very well. I heard incidents, but that is very natural, yeah. But I don't know. I didn't have much to do with civilians.
Now, what's the next thing that happens then? You're advancing towards Hamburg.
Yes, so we were then, and there comes this, so we landed in Klecken.
And how do you spell Klecken?
K-L-E-C-K-E-N, Klecken. And there was the brigade headquarters as well. So there they were, we had requisitioned some buildings, small, they were very poor, well, peasants. Little peasant houses, and there we in brigade were living in these houses, you know? Very simple living, and some were practicing still their Sten guns there in the gardens and all that, but there was nothing happening. But suddenly I was called up by some adjutant there down there to go to the river Elbe, where our, I think it's either the 11th or the 8th Hussars were patrolling. And they listened to the wireless sets, and they said they now suddenly had a foreign language which they couldn't make head and tail of. And I went into one of their, and I could see hear straight away there were Russians. So that means the Russians were very, very near, but they were communicating with each other. We couldn't understand that because the Russian telephones and communication were always very, very poor. You know, all I could hear, and I give them, do you hear me? I can't hear you. You know, all this. So I, of course, dashed back straight away and reported that they were near. But I think the high intelligence must have already known that. But I must say that because I mentioned that later to the German. And then suddenly I was called SOS to Brigadier Sperling, and apparently three Germans have arrived, and that's a famous story. Three Germans, two civilians and one officer, and they were saying, they were brought in by the Queens, yeah? And of course they wanted contact, and they said, they were quite foolish, stupid. They said that he was the director of not a hospital, some factory, and our artillery was shooting down there. So he was demanding that we not shoot on the fact because it is now a hospital and has some, it sounds fantastic, some English prisoners, wounded prisoners, you know? So Sperling said to him, this is completely quite ridiculous to come here. The Russians are very near, yeah? And you're, he said more or less, about turn and bring us a general, and then we'll negotiate. And they disappeared, blindfolded again, and then General Waltz arrived.
Now tell this story in as much detail as you remember, because remember, you haven't told us before. So tell us.
But that is very much...
That's what we want to know, that's what we're here for.
Well, so General Waltz arrived, alone. Apparently he's been before already higher to Major General Line, and that don't know. So Brigadier received him outside the tent. There were two tents we had. And then he said, no, we don't negotiate here. We go into our caravan. And that I know exactly, because I know everything what happened there. So they stepped in the caravan, and I went there. Now the caravan, he had a small bed there. He had a small table and also a cocktail, a small cocktail cabinet, where he slept occasionally down there. They sat round the table, and Sperling and General Waltz, and The negotiation, where as
follows. Where were you? You were there as
sitting in a chair, this little man there.
And you were acting as interpreter?
Yes, interpreter, and also telling Sperling sometimes, there, you know, what he said, what rhymed, whatever he said. Yeah. So Sperling said, we will immediately see this, the following. It is the first thing, it is unconditional surrender, and that is the first before we start talking. Unconditional surrender. Secondly, we want to occupy Hamburg either tomorrow morning or the day after, not later, but the following our condition. You have a good police, so we want every 200 yards on both sides of the road across where we will be advancing, German armed policemen to guard the route. As far as the bridge is concerned, that was mostly for us important, a fantastic bridge, is our military police will take over the guarding the bridge. Any incident will be punished very, very heavily. So we will move in, then, and then, of course, you must immediately also arrange a curfew over Hamburg. No civilians, no vehicles, nothing in the streets when they're out. So the general said, yes, that I can imagine, and I quite approve of that.
Now, what was General Walter's demeanor like in the interview? I mean, how was he behaving?
He was nervous. He was nervous, but very nervous, because Hitler was still alive. You know, he could have been executed. You know, Hitler wanted to defend, you see. The orders was to defend Hamburg, yeah. So he was, well, I just, do I, too long now or not?
No, carry on.
So, they were there around the table. So, small incidents are this. So Walt said, yes, all right, I guarantee we will do everything to your orders. He said, curfew, what about for the babies and the children in the morning, the milk and the cream, yeah? So, Brigadier Sperling said to him, well, how do you affect that? He said, well, we have vans coming, milk cars. He said, milk, but the vans can come and bring the milk. So when I said that to the German, they all laughed. You know? I thought that I wanted to put in. In any case, it was all signed and ready. And
do you remember anything else about negotiations? Anything else that happened or said?
There was not much. I only remember that during the negotiation, as a messenger came in for Sperling, and he handed him a note, and I understood that it said that Hitler has committed suicide. And I saw Waltz then doing this. So it was finished, and I do remember Sperling went to his cabinet, got the whiskey bottle. Got the whiskey bottle, poured him, was a full glass, who gulped it down, gulped it themselves, and I got such a little drop, a single finger. So, and that was the end.
Was there anyone else in the room?
In the caravan?
Only
Sperling, Waltz, and this. Then at a later stage, one of those who is photographing, Major Andre came in. He was a staff officer. Pompous arse he was.
Now, who was Walt surrendering? Just make this clear. Was he surrendering just the Hamburg area or what?
Yes, he was surrendering Hamburg. He had the command about Hamburg and surroundings.
That's what he was surrendering.
Yeah.
He wasn't surrendering.
No, North Germany was not. That was still going on. Yes, definitely.
Anything else happened then? So you have your single figure of whiskey. What happened?
Well, then happened that Sperling said, then that Major Andre came in, and Waltz told him what he has done, that he surrendered. Hermione. So Andre said, and I've published that everywhere, well, I as a Prussian officer, the only thing for me is left is to shoot myself. So Sperling said, well, in that case, take my English pistol. But all I want to tell you about this story, he lived ever after. I heard he was a very successful businessman in Hamburg. That was Andre. And then they left. So now Oh, yes. Because of Waltz's staff car, there was a fault. That's why he arrived alone. You know, so Sperling said that I should bring, it started getting darkish, I should bring Waltz into Hamburg. Can you imagine? I didn't like that very much, because for me it was very difficult to get used to drive on the right. And then we had this car, this German civilian car, you understand? And so I gave orders to that Dutch sergeant, this one, to drive Waltz into Hamburg. It sounds very unbelievable. So he did that.
You didn't go with them?
No. But I went later on with the whole column that was next to Hamburg. Yeah. And that was then the first day when in the Fiales started. Well, that was the more or less the end of the story. We stayed there 48 hours, and then we were in the village, and then you see...
You were in Kraken.
And then we had, later on, after that, we had a job, and that was, there I was very heavily involved with General Sperling, to disarm German soldiers who were coming from Denmark.
Now, that's later on.
That is later.
What happened next? I mean, Waltz is gone. What happened that night?
Anything? Waltz is gone, and then came orders to us, get ready, we are going into Hamburg, yeah. Say within 24 hours or 12, I don't remember. I remember it was delayed. So we all in the morning started a big convoy going into Hamburg.
Now, what do you remember of that, going into Hamburg?
All I know, it was absolutely perfect discipline anywhere. There were, the police were standing there to attention. We crossed the Elbbrücke. We went into the Jungfernstieg, and there I ran and Rick and got the apartment for this.
Well, tell us that story, because that's not on tape.
Hmm?
Tell a story.
Oh, it's not on tape, no? Well, the story is this, that I don't know exactly where I was, but I got orders from Sperling to get him a small apartment, and he asked me even, what hotel do you think we should go? And I said to him, well, you know, I would recommend you go into the Fiyas site, and maybe Major General will go to the Atlantic. And that is exactly what happened, because in the Atlantic, later on, that could be coincidence, Major General Lyon had his guard there, and the whole division landed there. His divisional headquarters was the Hotel Atlantic.
And you were in Hotel?
Fiyas, Four Seasons.
And did you move in there with Sperling?
No, I went with him, and he just settled down. There was nobody there, but I had then afterwards I was called off to do some other thing. So he stayed there alone, but I think he had a captain there coming afterwards. But I think he stayed there alone the night. I'm not sure. But there comes the story where he said to me, that is what my wife told you, that get me a...
Now remember, that's not on the tape, so they don't know that.
I see. Is that a good... That is still on.
They don't know?
How do you mean?
If you don't tell them, they won't know.
Oh, yes. So he said, get me... Well, go organize, he said. No, go organize me. Really a stiff drink, some cognac and a nice bottle of wine. So I went to the cellar, and they were, of course, very polite, and they picked it, and I brought it to him. Mm? And then I disappeared. I don't know why I had to go somewhere. Yeah. And then, of course, next day, that is, we started going to Bunningstedt. Yeah? But there was no incident. The population was absolutely perfection. And, of course, their fraternization was only in secret. That was forbidden. Yeah? Montgomery, you're not to mix with German population, or not with girls, and no contact. But that was very difficult to enforce, which Montgomery afterwards saw. Yeah? That was his idea.
Now, what was the date that you went into Hamburg?
Well, you know, I think it was the 3rd of May, but I'm not sure there.
And so your negotiations would have been on the 4th of May?
No. That was before. The negotiation in Klecken was probably on the 2nd or 3rd of May.
2nd or 3rd of May.
I don't know when they... Do you know, Hitler died, I think, on the... I'm not, but I'm sure that did on the, not died, poisoned himself on the 30th of April, I think.
I think that's right. So that would be when the negotiations...
That is when it was, I think. Yes, yes. It's, this is very difficult for me to be exact there. You understand that, yeah?
I do. So what happens next then? You couldn't stay, you didn't stay in Hamburg, did you?
I stayed one night. I think one night or two nights. That I'm not sure.
Because the war is still going on.
Oh, yes.
Maybe a truce or peace in the
quite
Hamburg
right,
area.
Quite right. Yes, and that we had to worry about. Hmm?
So where did you go? Tell me what happened next then.
Well, we went out of Hamburg to Bönningstedt, down there, what I said to this, where we...
You haven't heard.
Well, where I had the friend whom I knew from my hockey days, and they requisitioned his hunting lodge, and... We liberated it. Sperling actually told the officers to move out, and they moved into other quarters. And we stayed there. I think we stayed there one or two nights maximum. And then we advanced further towards Flensburg. Because there, I don't know then the date, you see, the war finished officially on the 8th. Yeah, that was official. So we had there the job to disarm people from Denmark. They had also the jobs to organize.
Now, was this before or after you got to Flensburg? I mean, where are we?
We were never all the... In Flensburg was the German second government under Dönitz. Yeah? But we were, well...
You were on the way there, but you didn't get...
We were on the way, no, we get... We stopped and then we had to disarm... The Danish...
Now, tell me about this process. These are the German troops that had occupied Denmark.
Denmark. They came marching. They were not all, but that was our sector. Yeah, they were marching along, and there was a point they had to get rid of their rifles and any ammunition, anything they were carrying, and then they marched along into prison, some prison where they went to afterwards, Canada, America, Timbuktu, or in Hamburg. And there were thousands. They were coming there, very healthy looking. That was there. And
there was
then
no trouble with any of them?
No, no, no.
Were you interrogating any of
no,
them?
No, no.
Just a matter of getting
they were
their
passing
weapons.
Just by and then just control. And then I had once a job, it was very shortly afterwards, that we had to go, I went there with a lieutenant, we had to go to visit two generals, German generals, and take their pistols. That was a rule, yeah? And so we went there, and they were standing there. Yeah? The next rule was, later on, that they should take anything which had a swastika, they had to take off. Soldiers and officers, everybody. That was an order from Montgomery. And that looked terrible, you know, with their empty things.
And what's the next thing you remember?
Well, we're coming now.
How were you getting on with Sperling? Can you talk a bit about... You haven't really talked much about Sperling yet. What was he like as a bloke, as a chap?
Very, very nice to me, always. Really nice. Absolutely. You couldn't have a better superior, yeah? Very nice, always.
What was he like? I mean, did he have any characteristics you can comment on, you know?
He was very, definitely very nationalistic, you know, very patriotic, very nationalistic. And then, you see, it's for me not criticized. And I saw his career afterwards. It's quite colossal. If you see, he was a lecturer afterwards in the military academy and all this. So I was, of course, I could only say that absolutely the highest, I had the highest regard. And when he got his DSO, he invited me to, that is, we are civil, I'm civilian now.
Okay, we'll come back, right. Okay, so you get to, now what happens next then? You're removing the Nazi...
There was no excitement. So in any case, we had to make order there, we were organizing food, and every morning there was a meeting between Sperling, a senior officer, and a German senior officer, a meeting where the Germans said what they required and in order to keep, you know, order, and supply the food positions and the milk, and there was every morning was a conference where I was present.
And do you remember anything about the sort of things that were coming up?
Well, the sort of things coming up was how much food we could give, what could be organized, you know, all the little details in order to keep prisoners and all this alive. Yeah.
Now, had the war finished now? Was there anything that you remember about Armistice Day itself? Not Armistice Day, sorry. D-Day.
I was in the field, and we only heard that peace has been signed, you know, but I don't know any. So we clapped the hand and just said, hooray, and the majority said, let's go home now.
So what's the next thing you remember then?
The next thing I only remember that after we were there, all in Germany, suddenly I got orders to report immediately. I've been detailed to go to Berlin with the advance party.
Now, what was the advance? Was this an advance party from the division or from the brigade?
That is actually acting for the whole army. For the advance party to clear the way there, and we had to go. The order was first, we had to go from the Hamburg airport. We had to report there, and I've still got some photographs there. And that was only Brigadier Sperling, Captain Mitchell, and the driver, and I. We had to go apart from the advance, we had to go. Now, we waited 2 days in the airport, and Stalin stopped it. He said, not by air, only by road. So we had to reorganize. So then Sperling was had orders from higher command to lead the column, whole international column, into Berlin. And there I was absolutely vital. Immediately they got hold of me, because I could speak Russian, you see. That was vital, otherwise you couldn't get in there from. And in a way, what I tell you sounds farcical, but it is the truth. So we started going, I don't know, you see in that column, I mean, there was a whole, probably, I don't know how much from the 7th Armored Division, but there were also other units from the British unit there, and then there were the Americans, and the tail were the French. So that column was led by Sperling and myself in a jeep. We didn't know what was behind. In any case, we started advancing, and the first stop